Well, welcome aboard, people, to the Health Forum, which is what we're all here for, what we really all want to be here for. So this is segment two of our Sydney branch, and it's the main Spring into Action event now, Member Forum. And it's about really a topic that's really important to all of us, and it's about taking charge of our health. Without our health, we're nowhere, of course. And it's very important that we all take control of our health. And our healthcare journey can be quite unpredictable. And for people who are blind or vision impaired, there are particular challenges that we face in getting the healthcare that we, getting our healthcare needs met and navigating the journey. And so we feel that we've lost control sometimes of what's going on. So during this segment, we're going to explore some ways that people who are blind or vision impaired can regain the important control that they need over their healthcare journey, putting themselves back in the driver's seat. I would like to introduce Fiona Woods, who is going to introduce to us Blind Citizens Australia's new healthcare resource to assist people going into hospital and initiate some discussion about things that we as people who are blind and vision impaired can do to improve our healthcare experience. And Fiona, as we know, is the director and chair of the BCA's National Policy Council. So without further ado, let me hand over to Fiona.
Thanks, Sandra. It's a real pleasure to be here this afternoon. But I will say that outside my house is a giant tree that's fallen down, dangling over the power lines. And there's a big crane out there, and they've promised not to disconnect the electricity. But if I suddenly go silent, I have got a phone with internet, you know, next to me. So if I disappear for a few minutes, Lynn Davis can speak for me. She might not know that. Anyway, hopefully nothing will happen and my electricity will continue uninterrupted and the tree will go away.
Thanks for the warning.
We've been doing a lot of discussion about healthcare recently at BCA, and I'm sorry that I wasn't really sure how many people would be at this meeting, so I wasn't sure how helpful it would be to try and have a conversation. So I guess I have planned to talk a fair bit, so I'm sorry we've already had a lot of talking, but hopefully we'll have a time for a bit of discussion afterwards. In our recent discussions, someone did comment at our recent BCA NPC meeting that there's so many ways that the healthcare system can make you feel disabled. Yeah. BCA wants to change that so that what you can get on with worrying about is your health and not your disability. So today I've assembled some information. In addition to the work that BCA has been doing in the healthcare area, I've actually assembled a little bit of information specifically really for New South Wales. Some of it is national. Sorry, can anyone hear me all right? There seems to be some feedback, so maybe if anyone wants to mute so that I don't hear myself 20 times, it could be a benefit. I'll be giving some links and some phone numbers, but I can circulate them all afterwards, so don't feel like you've got to sit there worrying that you won't remember these really interesting phone numbers. So there are some things we can control about our health. Obviously, we've probably all heard lots about diet, exercise, maintaining social connections and lots of sleep. Well, a good amount of sleep, and not smoking, limiting alcohol and caffeine. But some things about our health are determined by our genetics, our history, our lifestyle, and quite often just our luck. But even if you consider you've got excellent health, you can still have accidents. Things happen that you're not in control of. So whether you know you're going to come into contact with the healthcare system or not, it's really wise to be prepared. So I thought first I might have a look at some things we can do to have an action plan in case of an emergency, I guess. Now, you might want to have your plan in Braille, which could be good for you, but then maybe no one else can read it. You might want to print it out, but then you can't read it. So if you do come up with a way of having a plan, make sure that there's ways that you and other people can read it or at least know where it is. Now, recently I've come across a new Red Cross has recently released an app. It's called Get Prepared. And I had a little play with it last week. It seems to be a useful way of storing information about important people in your life, so you can put in some contacts that will be part of your plan. It has things like packing lists, checklists, things to think about, meeting points if your emergency is fire. You can choose all different emergencies that might happen to you. And some of them are civil unrest or storms or fires or just medical emergencies. It also enables you to share your plan with some people once you've finished it. So it's only a really brand new thing. As I say, it's called Get Prepared, and they are looking for feedback, and there seem to be some things I thought they might like to improve, but maybe it will be really good if you have I was trying it on the iPhone, but I imagine it's available in other ways. So maybe if anyone's interested to have a look at it, and certainly let them know if there's any things that you think could be improved. I think it's a really useful solution to a problem that we've all had, and I would really enjoy having that last year, because the emergency plan that the local fire brigade puts out is just a lovely print thing with lots of beautiful posters, which has never been very helpful to me. So I'm looking forward to having a proper plan this year. Whatever method you choose to create your plan, though, make sure you tell other people about it or where to find it. And you might even want to go so far as actually packing an emergency bag so that you've got it no matter what happens. And it might have things like spare chargers or an old iPod with some music that you like to listen to. Just really anything that you know where to find and other people might not. I have one with a pocket frame and a stylus, so that if I have to write little braille notes, I'm not lost, because no one else would know what I was talking about if I asked them to find that. So just something that you know that you can find quickly if you need to leave home early or unexpectedly. I know that at the moment there's lots of special considerations that apply in COVID times, and I don't know whether people have spent a lot of time thinking about what they would do if they were ill with COVID-19, but it is possible that you might have to go to hospital on your own and you might be very unwell and unable to communicate. So there's a few different organisations that have designed resources specifically for this situation. The Queensland Disability Network has one called Know Your Rights COVID-19, and it is very Queensland-based, so it's got lots of Queensland contact information. It's on the web, and I'm not sure, it's probably available in other formats, but it does actually have some really useful things to think about in terms of how you would cope in that situation. And there's also the Commonwealth Government has a thing called COVID-19 Hospital Companion for people with disabilities. It contains information about your support people, medication, common behaviours you might have, ways you might show pain. So it's the sort of thing that you might fill out this plan so that if you were on your own and you were sick and you couldn't speak to the people taking you to hospital, they would have this printout that they could look at. And you might want to include things like, I have artificial eyes, or I use hearing aids, or I need other communication devices, so that somebody knows your situation. Another thing you might want to think about is the New South Wales Disability Information Line, which is, I think, only for COVID. Oh, no, it's just a disability information line, and it's, I'll send this number out, but it's 1-800-643-787. I was actually hoping to ring and talk to them and find out what the situation is at present in terms of people with disability going to hospital in terms of entitlements to support workers and such, but I didn't have time. So, and if everyone would like to ring them on Monday, we can get an answer. Now, if you are going to hospital, or even if you don't think you are going to hospital, it's a really good idea at some point in your life to talk about to your family or your close friends about what you would consider to be essential to have for your care or well-being. It might be finding a way to fill in forms privately, might be being sure that you'll be able to complete menu selections, or it might be to operate the TV, or it might be that you'd like to know if your dog died from visit. There's a whole lot of things. We all have different things that are more important to us when we're sick, and you might want to make sure that your family knows what they are, because they might think they're different to what you think they are. You might want to have a sign just on display explaining to staff and other people that you have a vision impairment, but you might be particularly strong and or fussy or have strong feelings about what that sign should say. So in that case, you might like to actually provide your own wording for that sign. If you are thinking about these kind of things, these details that you want to have, maybe choose not too many of them. Explain them to your support people why those things are so important to you, and then express them in positive terms so that you don't just say, don't do this, don't do that. You know, you say, please tell me where my food is, or please, you know, don't throw my artificial eyes out with the tray, which has happened to someone I know. And if you find that your wishes aren't really being met when you are in hospital, you've got this sign, you've gone to all this effort and people still aren't doing the things you want, they're still not telling you where your food is, they're still sticking a tray at a weird angle on the bench so that you can knock it off easily, talk to your support people about this when they come to visit so that they can go and complain to the staff, because that way the staff won't see you as a difficult patient. They'll see you as having they'll think that you've got problematic family members. And it doesn't matter what they think about your family members because they're not interacting with them on a daily basis. And it might actually even make them nicer to you because they'll feel so sorry for you having such complaining family members. Now, this is a bit of a different issue, I suppose, but another part of planning that I know some of the staff people on my in National Policy Council often talk about is the importance of advanced care planning. So in New South Wales, there's a lot of information about how to discuss with your family what choices you might like to make at the end of your life, or if you've become extremely unwell, you might want to consider completing an advanced care directive, appointing an enduring power of attorney, and discussing organ donation. Also, obviously, as a lawyer, I'm here to tell you to make sure you've got a good will and maybe even talk about funeral plans at some point in your life. But make sure the people that know your wishes in relation to these end of care, end of life matters, but also make sure they're documented in a way that people actually know what you want, and tell those people where those documents are so that they can actually be followed. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about is pharmaceuticals. Now, there's been a lot of work done earlier on to get some pharmaceuticals labelled, and BCA was very active in getting the V on the Ventolin. I think that was shortly before. There's now about 20 different asthma puffers, so there's maybe one that's got the V. Some packets do have Braille labels. There's occasionally tablets that you might get. They're usually only if they're brand name ones, and it's usually if they're produced in Europe or North America where anti-discrimination legislation requires that. It is easier to get labelling on external packaging than it is, because there's lots of rules about how medicines are packaged and stored, so it can be quite hard to modify those things. Dr. David Skrill did do some work several years ago to develop a collaborative policy between BCA and the Pharmaceutical Guild, but staff and time moved on, and it looks like we'll have to revisit all that work. I think people do generally say pharmacy is hard to make change in. But there is an NPS medicine, 1300 medicine. I'll give you that number in a minute. 13 medicine, sorry. It's for consumers. It's got information about prescriptions, and that includes, it's got information about medications, including prescriptions, over-the-counter, complementary, herbal, natural vitamins and minerals. It's 1-300-633-424, but as I say, I'll send these numbers to the Sydney branch at least at some point. It's available Monday to Friday. It's not for emergencies or second opinions or for medical advice, but they can tell you how your medicine works, how to take it. So if you can't remember what the pharmacy said, it can tell you about side effects, interactions with other medicines, medicines during pregnancy and breastfeeding or for children. And that seemed to me to be something that a lot of us don't know about. As so often, there's resources out there, but we don't necessarily know about them. There's also a thing called Health Direct Helpline, which is 1-800-0-52s. And that one can give you health advice that isn't an emergency, but it basically is 24-hour access to a registered nurse. It's government accredited. And there's also an online Health Direct symptom checker. If you've got symptoms and you're at home and you just don't know, you can tell them about this. You can either ring up or you can do it online. The other thing I wanted to mention before I talk about BCA's work is the Healthcare Complaints Commission. Their emphasis is on resolving complaints first. First, you're supposed to, you know, speak to the provider concerned and try and resolve that complaint. But if that can't be achieved, you can refer a complaint to the commission. And it deals with complaints against public and private healthcare providers and unregistered providers such as naturopaths and massage therapists. So if you feel that you've been treated wrongly because of your disability, or for any other reason, you can go to the Healthcare Complaints Commission. And they can resolve the complaint, they can refer it for mediation, they can refer it to other bodies, especially other professional bodies. They can investigate it or they can discontinue it. And in each of those cases, they can make comments to improve the practice for the future. I'm just going to say welcome, David. We're just talking about David Woodbridge has joined, but we're just talking about some things people can do in the health space to care for themselves.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
It's Susie here. If you have, I know about the health line because you can ring it up and they have a registered nurse, but if you have a guardian in hospital, a legal guardian, can you ask the legal guardian, like, if you need to see a lawyer or someone, that a lawyer can come and visit you in hospital or in a nursing home? Like, if you're in a nursing home, can a lawyer come and visit you if you need to discuss legal issues with a lawyer or your will or something?
I really don't know the answer to that, Susie. I know that if you're in a hospital, you can't probably get other medical advice, but I'm not sure about legal advice. I would think so, but I don't really know. That's kind of not an area I've done much about. I'll just continue to tell you a little bit about what BCA has been doing in the healthcare space. You'd know a lot about it if you went to convention 2019 or if you've been reading BC News. If you're actually interested, we ran a workshop on surviving hospital at convention in Hobart, and the audio of that is up on the BCA website if you would like to listen to that, anyone. But we also have developed, the National Policy Council has recently developed a healthcare policy, and I don't want to say too much about it because we're going to be launching it at BCA Connect on October the 17th, and I don't want to bore people by talking about the same policy too much. But the policy is based on the Patient Charter of Healthcare Rights. It follows consultation with members and health professionals, and members told us that what they most wanted was resources to help them deal with hospitals, followed by help with dealing with general practitioners in terms of, disability rights. There was also a call for more accessible public screening programs such as bowel and breast screening. This was also urged by a recommendation at the 2019 convention, and we're currently working on strategies to progress this, but all the screening programs have been impacted by COVID-19, and we have decided that during this year hasn't really been a time to try and make major changes in the healthcare system in that way because it's been kind of distracted dealing with other things. But BCA MPC has developed a checklist for use if you are going to hospital. The checklist can really be used if you're preparing for any medical situation, really, like if you're meeting a new healthcare professional. But we will be developing specific checklists for use with general practitioners. The checklist is quite extensive and long, and I don't know that it's quite yet on the website, but it will be. So I didn't think it would be that helpful for us to sit here going through the checklist. But the idea is that you look at all the different questions on the checklist and you choose the ones that are relevant to you and you work on developing those ones. And if you are planning to go to hospital, there'll usually be a pre-admission appointment if it's for a long time, and that might be where you might discuss the things on the checklist that are important to you. You might really want to take a friend or a family member to support you, or you can have a patient advocate, they're sometimes called in hospital, or a hospital social worker. I think in Queensland they seem to be called nurse connectors. I think everyone seems to have a different name for them, but basically someone is there with you as a support person. But if you do that, just be clear that those people are there to support you and they're not there because you can't speak for yourself. So what you don't want is a situation where the hospital assumes, as so often happens to all of us, that they should speak to the other person with us and not us. You might also want to discuss your situation with the doctor who will be treating you or who's admitting you to the hospital. So I know in my case that I had a letter from my obstetrician to the nurse unit manager before I went into the hospital, and it made a big impact on the way the preparations that were made for me in the hospital because they're prepared to listen to people like that more than necessarily just patients. obviously that was a few years ago. So the kind of issues on the checklist are things like accessibility of information and documents, accessibility of the physical infrastructure so that you'll be oriented to your room properly, respect, main thing is respect. A really big one there is specifying that you don't want to be asked questions maybe about your blindness or vision impairment unless they somehow relate to your treatment, because we've all been there and we have to basically explain our whole life to medical people, and that's not what we're there for. Also, there's topics around privacy and consent, so to make sure that you get proper information privately, that you have a choice about whether or not medical students are part of your treatment, and if they are, what they're told about you, because you don't necessarily want to be the sort of demonstration blind person for them all to learn about. Maybe you do. Maybe that's something that you feel strongly that you are happy to do, but that's a choice you might want to make. And then another thing that this checklist looks at is what happens after hospital. So it's really important that our discharge takes into account our access to medications, how we're going to get to our follow-up appointments, and who to call if there's something we're not sure about, particularly if we're home by ourselves. So that's basically a real quick summary of the checklist, and I look forward to actually sending all of you a finalised version of it. But it will be a living document, so if there are things that you think should be in there that aren't in there, then please let someone at the MPC know, because we would really it's supposed to be responsive and meet people's needs. So healthcare is a huge topic, and it can be a really private one. As I say, you can hear more about it at BCEA Connect. But if you want to get it more involved in the sort of work that we have been doing, there is an election for the National Policy Council coming up for the New South Wales representative is up this year. And I believe that Lynn Davis would like to spend 1 minute or so telling you about her experiences as an MPC member.
First of all, I'd like to check whether I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, Fiona likes to spring surprises on people, and some of the things she said today have been quite surprising, but I'm really glad that whatever was outside chopping up that tree didn't disrupt your telephone line, because in fact I think that was great and really interesting. The National Policy Council is the body which has been doing some of the work that Fiona's just been talking about, developing a healthcare policy for BCA, and then specifically beginning the work of creating some resources for our members, but other people as well, to be able to use. And the first of those was the hospital checklist that Fiona's just described. The National Policy Council has been in existence for, I think, 4 years now, but there was a previous body called the National Policy and Development Council, which did similar work. It's been a bit streamlined to become the National Policy Council, and I think actually works very well. It consists of a number of board members and then a representative from each of the states and the ACT. That's its membership at the moment. And as Fiona said, there are a number of positions which are coming up for election at this round of elections later in the year, one of those being the position of New South Wales representative. So it seemed like a very good opportunity to just mention that to people here today and say, think about it. If you have an interest in this kind of work, think about putting your hand up for election to that position, because it's very important, I think, that we do have these publicly available statements about things that are really important to us as blind and vision impaired people. So we've been talking about the healthcare policy today, but there are lots of other policy areas as well. Sometimes they're sent to the NPC by the board. There are a lot of policies that are quite active now. For example, a policy on pedestrian safety, which was developed maybe more than 10 years ago, and they're in need of revision. Pedestrian safety issues have changed over the years since the policy was first written. So there are factors such as sighted cars, autonomous people, self-driving vehicles, electric bikes and scooters on footpaths. Things change all the time, and they're not going to stop changing. So we need to be able to continuously update the work that we do to say what, as an organisation, what our policy position is whenever it's necessary, and to create the resources that help our members and other blind and vision impaired people to think about these issues and to be able to articulate them when they need to. But, you know, if we're in hospital, it's really too late to start thinking about the issues. We're experiencing some of the problems, but we really want to go well prepared with the benefits of the thinking which has already been done around the kinds of things that Fiona's just been describing. So I think that's enough at the moment about the NPC, but you will receive, however you receive it, information fairly soon about the annual general meeting of Blind Citizens Australia and all of the elected positions that are coming up, not just on the National Policy Council board as well. And it's a really good experience. It's an experience I've had in a number of ways and really enjoyed. And I know that there are numerous people here at this meeting this afternoon who've also participated in those bodies and enjoyed the work. But there are other people who haven't yet. And I think change and turnover is always a really healthy thing. So I think that's it. I don't think I've surprised Fiona. I wish I could think of a quick surprise for her, but I don't have one right now.
It's Sonric here. Can I just add to what Lynn has said, in that some of the work that happens at the National Policy Council level arises out of concerns raised at a local or branch level. And I guess a classic example of that would be the policy on pedestrian safety. The original BCA policy in this space, I think from memory, had its antecedents in the work done at Sydney by Sydney branch by the late Pat Downey, who would be known to some of you, who worked when he was secretary of the Sydney branch with others to develop a book on Streetwise. It's called Streetwise, I think it was, and it was all about accessible pedestrian pathways and cutting down overhanging tree branches, and that's the thing. So that went to a different level, and it found its way ultimately to the policy development stage with the NPC. And the same with the motor scooters policy. It came out of a resolution that we put, the Sydney branch, put to the Blind Citizens Australia Convention in Hobart. And here we have now the council working on a policy whose antecedents started in a particular branch. So there is an important relationship, so members can have a say in it.
That's okay. Right. If I could just come back for a moment and follow on from what Sandra said. Over the last couple of years where I've been the New South Wales representative on the National Policy Council, one of the things I have done before the council meetings is just get in contact with a number of people around the state, such as Sandra and presidents of other branches and the chair of the state division, to get a sense of whether there are issues around the state that could be brought up to the NPC and might help to inform the policy development we're already doing, or some new area that we may take up in the future. And actually, that process has become a little bit more streamlined now, thanks to Jennifer Parry, who's here this afternoon, because Jen is now sending me the minutes of the state division meetings, and that's a really helpful way of keeping me up informed about what's being discussed at the state division, which takes some of the work away that's already been done. So that's been great, and thank you very much for that, Jen.
welcome.
Okay. Fiona, is there anything further before we move on to our next segment?
No, I'm looking forward to hearing what David has to say. Oh, Susan?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Sorry, was that someone speaking?
Yeah, it's Susan. I just wanted to really quickly say, if I may, just a 30-second plug. In conjunction with or in parallel with some of this work that Fiona's talked about from BCA, the Centre for New South Wales Health Centre for Clinical Innovation have a project running to improve the in-hospital experience of people who are blind or have low vision.
Your keyboard is set to that. Would you like to stick with that?
And so that's some work that's also going on in parallel with this. I represent Vision Australia on that committee, but, you know, obviously my input is as a person who's blind or has low vision. So, yeah, that's just another – I just want people to be aware of that. They also spoke at last year's BCA convention.
Yeah, they did, and they'd done a lot of really useful research.
Yep.
Thank you. Thanks, Susan. No, that's important information, and I know they're doing some very good work in that space. Okay, so thank you, Fiona, and everyone for your input into that presentation. It was very informative. And hopefully we'll have a little time to make any recommendations if people feel inclined that may inform the work of the NPC. Okay, so moving on to our next speaker, our final speaker for today, David Woodbridge, who really is no stranger to most of us. He's known to many of us. He's the Adaptive Technology Advisor at Vision Australia, and he's going to talk to us about some gadgets and technical innovations which we as people who are blind or vision impaired people can use to monitor some aspects of our health with independence. So over to you, David.
Excellent. Time to talk about my toys, which is always fantastic. Good afternoon, everybody. So, look, what I thought I would do is I'd go through the not so much the boring stuff, but I'd go through some of the gadgets that I personally use and some of the reasons behind them. But at the end of the day, this device to monitor your wellness, and when I say wellness, I mean things like your health, as in your blood pressure, your heartbeat stuff, your wellness, and your exercise, all that sort of stuff, is the thing you wear all the time, whether that's an Apple Watch, a Galaxy Watch, a Fitbit or something else, so in conjunction with third-party hardware. So if you just choose any one of these, sometimes, depending on what you're doing, in some ways you don't really get any benefit. And there's that particular myth at the moment which really irritates me, is that, you know, it's if you walk 10,000 steps a day, you're being healthy or you're being really good about your health. And the answer is you're not, because there's no medical backing up for the 10,000 steps a day. What people really want you to see you're doing is getting your calories, getting your heart rate up, movement, whether it's basically exercise movement. So I can quite easily walk 10,000 steps. At the end of the day, my heartbeat may have only risen by about 10 to 20 beats per minute, which means I'm not burning anything off my system. But anyway, just let me get onto a few devices. So I've sort of spread these up into health, wellness, and exercise. So keep in mind that all these sort of come together to do my whole, I guess, health regime throughout the day. So the first is monitoring your weight. And I've really liked the scales that Vision Australia sell in some ways, because I don't know if they're accurate. So my favourite weight scale has always been the one from a company called Y-Things, and that's W-I-T-H-S, Y-Things, and it's called the Y-Things Body Mass Scale Analyzer. And it does your weight. It's also supposed to do your body mass ratio, and it also does your blood pressure, apparently, through the heels of your feet. But it's very accurate. Now, of course, being a standard piece of equipment, you normally then have that joined in via your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone, via the health app or the Why Things app itself, or via the HealthMate app on the Samsung Galaxy. So it can be used on both Android or iPhone. And what's nice about it is that really it's once you put the batteries in and you pair it to whatever device, home smartphone you're using, you stand on it for 30 seconds, get off, go back and check your app, and hey presto, there's your weight. And the really cool thing about this is, and this is a little bit, you will get side assistance for. If it's just you, then don't worry about it. If you've got six people in your family or more than one using it, you can set up what are called weight profiles. So if you stand on the weight and you're 75 kilos, somebody else stands on the scale and they're 95 kilos, the scales will work out which person they're supposed to be monitoring, and then they will actually update that weight for that particular person. So here at home, Ellen, my wife, she set up one for me, her, and both my boys. So whenever they jump on the scales, they get their appropriate reading for themselves. So that's the Weigh Things Body Mass Analyzer. Blood pressure. I know blood pressure has always been an interesting one. Now, I always like to say to people, a lot of this stuff, not so much the scales, but the blood pressure and the heartbeat stuff, I always say that these are wellness indicators. They are not meant to be medical devices. So don't bet your life or anything else on them. Just take them as a state of your overall wellness, because, of course, if you feel sick, faint, out of breath, your heart feels funny, all that sort of stuff, then, you know, go and seek medical attention. But the blood pressure monitor that, again, I like is, the one from Why Things. I find the one from Vision Australia, the talking blood pressure monitor, I honestly don't know if it's that accurate. I've tried it a few times, and it's one of those devices where I try and convince myself that it's okay, and I still can't quite get there. Whereas the blood pressure one that Why Things produced, because it was produced in the United States, it had to go through the Food Administration in the States and get passed as, I don't think it was classified as a medical device, but it had to go through certain things to be called a proper blood pressure monitor. And like all blood pressure monitors, you've got a little cuff that you put around your arm. There's a huge battery in it and a pump, which you charge up via a USB connection. Again, you connect it via the Why Things app. And what you do is you run the Why Things app, you tap on blood pressure, and it says, please remember to have your arm in a nice, relaxed position, hopefully with your forearm resting on a table. And then do you want to start your blood pressure monitor? So you tap on start, and of course it squeezes the hell out of your arm while it's doing it, and then it relaxes and you get both your high and your low pressure blood readings. Now, I've always, and plus your pulse rate, and I've always found that one to be really, really excellent. Now, keep in mind, all these biometrics that I'm getting, these are forming an overall picture of my overall health. So far we've done blood pressure and we've done weight. So they're the two important things. And this third important thing, of course, is your body temperature, particularly in the days of COVID. Vision Australia does sell a temperature thermometer which will actually beep at you depending on your current temperature. It's got four levels of beeping. I didn't want beeping. I wanted proper numbers. So what I did, I went and got it's called the Thermo, T-H-E-R-M-O, temperature thermometer. And it's like the ones that you might find that people use in hospitals when you walk into the door to reception and they ask you to take your temperature. They point this infrared thing at your forehead, and within less than 2 seconds, it gives your temperature reading. And that's the one that I use for myself. Again, and I seem to be, I must be turning into a bit of a product supply person for Why Things, because again, it's a Why Things monitor. But the fact is it works, and that's the reason why I love it. And all you do basically is you put two AAA batteries in it, you turn it on, you go to your Bluetooth on your smartphone, you pair it, and it's literally ready to go. You run the Thermo app, point at your forehead, and the nice thing about it is once it's got the reading, it actually vibrates. So 2 seconds later, if it vibrates, you put it down, it turns off automatically, you go and check your app on your smartphone, and there's your temperature reading. We were going to get some talking thermometers at Vision Australia. Unfortunately, there must have been some translation issue between English and Chinese, because the ones weren't talking. They were low vision talking thermometers, which weren't actually talking. So that was a bit disappointing. So the new one that I know there's a bit of a buzz about at the moment is all about this stuff that Apple's brought out in the new Apple Watch Series 6, S6, and that's your blood oxygen level. So that's the reading of how much oxygen in your red blood cells is taken up by your lungs when you're breathing, and that's a good monitoring, again, of your overall health. It does it within 15 seconds. It does a nice little countdown for you. Again, you've got to rest your arm, be relaxed. If you move, it actually gets cross at you and says, don't move. We'll have to do it again. And it gives you a reading. So what it says in the documentation is most people are between a blood oxygen saturation level of 95 to 100. And if you get below that, some people are quite okay at being fine and with a lower blood oxygen. Some people are not. And, of course, things that affect your blood oxygen level are things like weight, altitude, health, exercise, other conditions you might have, and so on. And I've noticed in a lot of the documentation that Apple's written behind all their health stuff, they're always urging you that these are just purely indicators. They're not, you know, again, don't stick your life on any of these readings. And I'll get to what I use all the time in a minute. But with all this sort of stuff, again, I keep saying this is all in combination with each other. Don't rely on just one biometric. You have to put this whole thing in to be very holistic. Heartbeat is a good one, particularly when you're exercising, because normally when you go for a walk, your heartbeat can range between, if you walk in a flat surface, I normally say around about, I don't know, 75, 80 beats per minute, depending on how healthy you are. When you start to do cardiovascular workout, your heartbeat has to be at least above 90 to 95 beats per minute. Otherwise, you're not going to actually get anything achieved, really. And some of the really great things that monitor your heart, besides the Apple Watch, the Galaxy Watch does it as well. And the reason why I recommend Galaxy Watch is because if you don't have an iPhone, then you can't use the Apple Watch. But if you've got a smartphone like a general Android, one like the Pixel, or you've got a Samsung phone, then the Galaxy Watch, which has got built-in Spoot and large print, is a really good way to also monitor your heartbeat. In actual fact, the heartbeat on the Galaxy Watch is a direct heartbeat monitor. The one on the Apple Watch seems to have its own way of doing it. So sometimes it'll be instant, sometimes it'll take 5 minutes. I'm not too sure what it's doing half the time, but they'll both do it. The Fitbit also does it very accurately. So with the main difference between the Apple Watch, the Galaxy Watch, and the Fitbit is with the Apple Watch and the Galaxy Watch, you can read the information off the watch face, of course, with the built-in screen reader. With the Fitbit one, you've got to get your app get the app running on your smartphone out of your pocket. If I'm running on the treadmill, I've got to take one hand off the handlebar, hopefully open the app without falling off the treadmill, and then read the information. Whereas with the Apple Watch and the Galaxy Watch, you just wake it up and you normally leave it on the screen you want, and that way you can get your direct heartbeat. So it's much easier and much safer, quicker. Sleeping, of course, we're all into odd sleeping patterns at the moment because of COVID. I'm having really weird, wonderful dreams. My sleeping pattern's been completely stuffed up. So sleeping, again, is really important because you need the rapid eye movement, the deep REM sleep, to get good sleep quality. Again, the Galaxy Watch, the Fitbit, the Apple Watch does it. I notice the S6 now that I've got on my wrist at the moment, it seems to be a lot more reliable in tracking my sleep pattern over the Galaxy Watch, but the Fitbit's still pretty good as well. But the Apple Watch again gives me instant access to the data because I'm literally wearing the Apple Watch on my wrist. So again, I set up the sleep time. I normally go to sleep at about 11:45 at night. I get up at 5:45 in the morning, and I just see how much deep sleep I've had, how restless I've been, how many times I've apparently moved during the night, all that sort of stuff. So, of course, the better sleep you get, the better off you are. Now, this next one, I know people find, and people chuckle that they haven't got an Apple Watch about this one, but this is a stand reminder. So if you're like me and you're doing a lot of research, you're reading lots of documentation, you're sitting on your bottom a lot, and this stand reminder, and the Galaxy Watch actually does this as well, and so does the Fitbit to some extent, it reminds you to get off your bottom and get moving, at least stand up, go for a walk around the house or do something for at least a minute to get the blood moving and your system moving, and then you can sit down again if you really have to. But I just find the stand reminders really, really good just to get you moving a little bit and a bit more exercise rather than completely sitting all day, which is, again, bad for your posture and everything else. And I noticed even on the latest Mac operating system version that's coming out later on this year, which is called Big Sur, that's got a stand reminder on it. So now not only do I have the pleasure of my watch nagging me to get up and move, I also have the pleasure of my Mac telling me that I'm been typing on the keyboard, look too long, get up and get moving. So that'll be fun. Now, the final one on health is calories burned, or as we have to say, kilojoules burned. That's what I'm talking about when you're moving. It's how much your system burns, not how far you've walked. So, in fact, my walking step count is only set at about 7,500 a day. My calorie burn set at about 2,500 because I'm a bit lazy at the moment, which equates to around about 700 calories in the old measurement. But it's how much energy you're burning, whether you're walking, sleeping, moving, exercising, doing workout routines, going to the gym, all that sort of stuff burns kilojoules. And that's what the movement's all based on, is how much your system's burning. So it's taking in the food, burning all the stuff that it needs, and how much energy you're actually using as you're doing all those different activities. So that's all the devices I want to talk about. And look, by the way, I'll send Fiona and Sandra and everybody else, or maybe just Fiona, I'll send her a list of the stuff I've talked about, because I know I'm going through this very rapidly. But I thought I've only got about 20 minutes, so I wanted to sort of very quickly whip through all this stuff fairly fast. But I'm assuming, Fiona, it's being recorded, so people can go back and have a re-listen. All right, so wellness. Wellness is all about your mind, your spirit, your health, your soul, all that sort of stuff that people like to go on about. I just say it's mindfulness. It's taking care of yourself, not only physically, but psychologically. So, you know, we've done a bit of the body stuff already, but this is about the inside of you, how you think, you feel, how you respond to stress, all that sort of stuff. And all the above health stuff is to reduce your level of stress as well. Because if you don't exercise, your stress level normally goes up. You find it harder to cope with anxiety. If you're not sleeping well, you find it hard to concentrate during the day, all that sort of stuff. So that's all well and good doing the sort of the healthy type stuff. But I think for wellness, I often time out in the day just to purely meditate. So whether that's breathing, listening to relaxing music. In fact, my wife complains that the relaxing music I put on the day actually puts her to sleep because she likes 90s alternative sort of Triple J type music rather than my sort of ocean rain type type of music. So meditation is really, really good. In fact, I've got, to help me sometimes go to sleep at night, I've got these pair of headphones called sleep headphones, and they're, if you can imagine, a fabric band that goes around your head, and where it goes over your ears, there are very soft, thin, flexible speakers. And then at the back of the band, you've got a little Bluetooth transmitter. So they pair to your smartphone, and then you can play anything you like as a normal Bluetooth headset for those speakers. And the nice thing about them is that when you roll over or you lie on your side, you don't get the earpiece getting crushed into your ear as if you were using a normal pair of earpods or whatever else. So they're actually very, very good. So, and that means if you want to listen to meditation music, standard music, listen to the radio, listen to audio books, listen to electronic books, Daisy books, whoever you like, they work out really nicely. And they just block enough noise, I guess, to take that harshness off the general environment and also to when you want to go have a sleep or just meditate a little bit. Recreation and relaxation. There's a couple of things I want to mention here. So things like, just for the radio in particular, I want to mention the Syngenian radio. That's the accessible AM, FM radio that Vision Australia actually sells. I know it's a bit pricey, just over $300, so it's not cheap, but the whole thing is accessible. It all talks to you about the frequency, the channel, whether you're changing AM to FN, FM, all your favourites, all that sort of stuff works. The other thing nice about that radio is there's a set, and these are free, there's a set of MP3 files from a place called blindalive.com. Now, the lady there, Trish Scott, used to have an app on the iOS app store called Blind Alive, and they were all these different exercises. And what I'm doing now with mine is, and I've downloaded this because they're all free, like I just said, so they're purely MP3 files, so you choose the one you want. So they've got things like gentle chair yoga, gentle yoga, boot camp, cardio workout 1 and 2, stretching, morning and evening stretching, balance ball, quite a lot of other ones. So they're actually very good. So what I might do, I'm just going to take my headphones out and I'm actually going to plug in my mixer and hopefully my machine will behave itself. You can actually hear what it sounds like. But these are actually really good. And the nice thing about them is that unlike other exercise routines and especially apps you download from the App Store, they're actually described. So they don't go, now we're going to do pinwheel star movement. It's like, well, what the blazes is the pinwheel star movement? So this will actually be explained and what they're doing. So what I might do, let's see, let's do 20-minute workout, light warm-up and stretch. So I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm just going to plug my mixer into my Mac. And here we go. Have a listen.
20-minute workout.
This is your Eyes-Free Fitness 20-minute light warm-up and stretch. This program is designed to do when you just feel like stretching out and warming up a little
bit.
Nothing strenuous. You don't have to do a strong strengthening workout every day. We're just going to warm up our muscles a little bit today and then stretch out. All you will need is a chair. Let's begin by sitting tall in your chair and breathing your arms way up, out to the sides and up to the sky, in through your nose and out through your mouth. Arms back down to your side. Sit.
Okay.
Breathe.
So that's what it sounds like.
20-minute workout, light warm-up and stretching.
Like I said, there's probably all up about... Sorry, that's my Mac talking very loudly. It's all about... I think there's about 66 different routines you can go through. And I just, as I just said, they're all free. And what I sometimes do with my radio is I normally transfer these either on my iPhone, my Samsung phone, or my Victorita Stream. And I normally pipe it through the Syngene radio that I've got sitting in my kitchen because I can put it on auxiliary mode and just have the speakers a bit louder if I'm in the kitchen. And the nice thing about these fitness routines, the Blind Alive ones, is that you don't have to move around. As long as you've got a meter of space around you or if you just want to sit on a chair, you can do most of the light fitness, yoga, stretching, cardio workout ones very, very well. I always hate going to the gym when you're going from equipment to equipment because you're always in front of like either trying to sit on somebody that's already on something or bumping into someone when you're switching machines, which I've actually done before. Used to be fine when I was 25 years old. I don't know about being over 50 now. It's not too much fun anymore. So that's one thing I just wanted to point out to you. So blindalive.com, you can download the zip files or all of them if you want to. There's no limit. And put them on your favorite MP3 player, and you can enjoy getting it well. And the other thing I wanted to mention coming out towards the end of this year is a thing from Apple, and it's called Fitness One. And what Fitness One is going to do, it's going to allow you to sync up your Apple Watch to your Apple TV, and they'll be having a new live exercise routine every week. And you can check all your biometrics. So you can check your blood oxygen level, your heartbeat, your calorie burn, how much you're moving, your heartbeat, all that sort of stuff that you would normally just be able to tell on your Apple Watch. That's going to be instantaneous as you're doing all these live routines. Now, the thing that I've already asked is that's all well and good, but because it's going to be a live event, is there going to be some way for blind or low vision people to work out what the live person is going to be doing on the screen? because it's no good if a person doesn't understand. So hopefully they'll get back to me sooner than later and we'll be able to find out. So if it's not audio described, because I understand audio described on the spot is sometimes a bit difficult. But, you know, even if they had things like, well, before we start, you can download a description of all the exercises contained in the return today. That would be at least better than nothing, but it'd be nice to have it sort of live described if you want, if you're new to all that. All right. The final one I want to talk about is basically putting this all together. So, like I said, all these things are in different bits and pieces. My basic routine during the day is, and it's quite simple because people always look at the Apple Watch and they think, oh, my God, you know, these three rings, 100%, how the goodness can anybody get them all closed? I only do 30 minutes of exercise a week. Now, remember when I say exercise, I'm talking about getting my heartbeat above 90 beats per minute. I'm not talking about how far I walk. So I simply do these things. I have a Wave Master, which is a very large sort of boxing bag. I do 2 minutes on that. 2 minutes on that. I do 2 minutes on a stepper. I do 2 minutes sitting up and standing down, and I do 2 minutes on another little machine that the name of it's escaped me at the moment. Then I have a break for 60 seconds, and then I do all that routine four times, and then I go and go on the treadmill for 15 minutes. So all up, that's round about 30 minutes. On the treadmill, I allow myself 5 minutes of being a bit slack, but the 10 minutes has to be solid at least above 110 beats per minute, just to make sure that I'm really burning it. And normally that will give me my 30 minutes of exercise a day. The stand one is basically making sure that you stand up every hour because I've got my Apple Watch whinging to me. That always works. And then, of course, the general movement one is about energy being burnt and roughly how far you walked. And just a trick or just a tip, if you want to use an Apple Watch and you're wondering why your rings don't move, if you don't invoke a routine, so the routines at the moment, there's new workout ones for boxing, walking, indoor treadmill, even soft exercise can be seen as strength building, so that's another workout. But if you don't invoke the workout routine, what the Apple Watch does, it only uses one biometric reading, which is your heartbeat. So it just assumes that whatever you're doing, you're going through a brisk walk, which is barely your heartbeat getting up. Whereas if you invoke the workout, so let's say I'm doing boxing, where sometimes my heartbeat can get up to about 167, 170 beats per minute, it will kick in the accelerometer, it'll kick in the gyroscope, it'll kick in the heartbeat. So it's then using three biometrics to give you my overall reading at the end of that workout. And that's a lot more effective at telling what I'm doing than just going, oh, well, I can't be bothered. It's too much work to, you know, go and press the workout app, open the workout app, press the boxing button, and off I go again. So that's what I would suggest if you're going to do that. But overall, at the end of the day, the reason why I mainly use the Apple Watch over the Galaxy Watch and the Fitbit, because the Apple Watch always works, it's always on my wrist, it's always talking. With the Galaxy Watch, I've had issues with the Samsung speech sometimes failing, and of course with the Fitbit, I've always got to use an app on my smartphone to actually read the information off my Samsung phone or my iPhone, whereas the Apple Watch, I can read it anytime. So if you're after a new watch, I'd recommend or a fitness tool, Health Tool, the S6. If you don't want oxygen blood pressure reading, then the SE is perfectly fine. So that brings it down from 599 to 429. But just remember too, we've also got the S3 still around. GPS, not cellular, and that's at 299. And I only just retired my S3 yesterday, and that will still give you all those biometrics that I was talking about today. So that's all the health stuff in a nutshell. I've gone up through it very quickly, but like I said, I'll write up an email on the stuff I talked about, and people can always listen to it back again. So thanks for listening to me. Any final questions? But I've just realised I've gone 10 minutes over time. Sorry.
Any questions for David? Wow.
Somebody gone to sleep? Oh, dear.
No, I have a question for you, David. I believe that with the new Apple SE Watch, there is a feature that enables the user to program emergency contacts in there. So if they have a fall,
correct,
it's activated somewhere. So maybe you can tell us a bit more about that.
So it's activated under, what is it, under Settings Emergency SOS. Now, if you're under 65, because when you set your Apple ID up, you're supposed to tell the truth about your age. If you're under 65, the fall protection will not turn on automatically. It's you have to go and manually turn it on. And then what happens is if it detects a drop, because it's got a altimeter in it, and it also an accelerometer, if it, it detects a fast fall or a fast movement, it will then say, we think you've had a fall. If you don't do anything within, I think it's 10 seconds, we will call emergency SOS and also contact your emergency contact with your current location. And what it also then does is does a phone call, not only to emergency SOS, but it also can do a phone call out to your loved ones or your relatives and everything else. So it's a really feature to have with the fall protection. So that's in the SE, the S6. It's not in the S3, though.
Thank you. Any other queries?
Yes, Sandra.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep.
I've been having trouble getting the mute on and off. David, I just wanted to flag with you to maybe double check on the REM sleep issue, because there are all kinds of levels of sleep which are equally important. So I just don't want to be kind of promoting misinformation, I guess, because REM sleep is one of the many levels of sleep, and my understanding is that REM sleep is almost being awake, even though it's a very important element of sleep.
That's interesting, because the way I understand REM sleep is the exact opposite. REM sleep is actually when you're dreaming.
All right. Yeah, yeah. But in fact, you're not sleeping all that deeply. But I think we might want to chat about that offline. I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff about it. I mean, even the app goes into the different sleeps.
Right. Okay, good.
At the end of the day, if you have a good night's sleep, then you're told about it.
Okay, well, that's the important thing.
Cool. No worries.
Thanks, Susan. Georgia, as an OT, a budding OT, do you have any questions?
The only one I would have was just in regards to what they were talking about previously with the access in hospitals and stuff. Is it only really apps that they have that could help to, you know, make the filling out forms either and all that? Or, you know, the hospitals have the access to technology where, you know, they've got forms with easy to read stuff or Braille or whatnot. Is that something that's like done, or is it more just it's up to the person going into the hospital to have their situation sorted, sort of thing?
Do you want me to answer that, Sandra?
Yeah.
Yes, Fiona.
Well, I guess our hope is that people would be able to get those forms in the format that they can use. Now, a lot of hospitals now do actually have a lot of that stuff electronically, but a lot of hospitals still don't, and there's still paper forms. So we would hope that people could get that in a format that they could use, or at least that they would be able to do it somewhere privately if the paper form's not available. I mean, really, under discrimination law, that should be accessible to people, but, you know, hospitals will always talk about budgets and all those things, so it's probable, you know, you're probably not going to get a nicely browed-out form, but
yeah.
I guess also it depends a bit on the time. If you know you're having a standard, you know, a procedure that's done often, like a hip replacement or something, maybe there should be some form, at least some information, general information available in Braille. And generally, I think the experience of most of the people we spoke to was that sort of information isn't generally available. Or if it is, people don't know about it. So a lot of it is finding the person who knows whether the stuff exists and then actually accessing it. So, yeah, the hope is that it is accessible, and that's why we're suggesting you try and talk to people before you go. But realistically, it so often isn't, and it's really not acceptable. But then you've got to find a way to actually process that.
For sure.
In a way that is acceptable.
Yeah. Also, I don't know, I think even Sandra could answer this one for me. In regards to the smartwatches and all those sort of technologies, are they covered most of the time, not most of the time, by NDIS, or is it
just
out of pocket?
No, they're not. Because they're considered a mainstream product.
Right.
Yep.
Whereas if it's a assistive technology itself sort of thing, they will.
Yeah. Because anyone could acquire those.
because yeah, Apple yeah. Watches are just Apple Watches, and anybody can get an Apple Watch kind of a thing. Mm.
That's true, yes.
That's not necessarily an argument we agree with, but...
No, for sure. No, for sure.
To doing an assessment, though. So if you get an occupational therapy assessment and the watch is deemed to be useful to you. So, for example, my wife has got an Apple Watch through the Indos because she's prone to falling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because she's, you know, just falls over. She's falling over. She's got a neuropathy condition where her legs are weak.
Right, yeah.
She falls, she can't have her iPhone because it slipped out of her hand or a bag. So when she had an occupational therapy assessment, she got recommended the Apple Watch because she can get emergency contact when she needs it, she falls over.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't dismiss the Apple Watch out of hand, but it's, again, you've really got to get an assessment done to get it through. I know about five people that the Apple Watch through, but the main one that I know is mainly around occupational therapy in general, and particularly physical disabilities.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Georgia. Thank you, David and Fiona. It's raised some pretty important issues for us. Are there any burning recommendations that people want to put forward at this point? No? Okay, well, I think the most important thing is that we keep abreast of this work and encourage its continuation, really, from BCA's point of view, and David and his colleagues in researching these products and sharing information about it, because it's really important that we know what is out there. I've learnt so much today about the products that are out. One thing we haven't covered is things like diabetes machines, how to monitor your blood sugars as a blind person. That's another area altogether, and that's changing as well. But it's important that we not only find out what's out there, but explore opportunities for training, because a lot of the time you can't get training from your blindness service agency. The health services don't provide that because they're not used to working with people with vision impairment. And you ask for training from a blindness service agency to learn how to take your blood pressure, blood sugar, and they say, oh, no, you've got to go through an assessment and you've got to go through 101 steps, and 6 months later you could be dead because you've got a diabetic condition that's out of control. They're important factors as well. So the technology and the human support is very important, and the two are very closely connected. Any final questions before we wrap up? Okay. Well, on behalf of Sydney Branch and everyone here in attendance today, I'd like to thank Fiona and David for their presentations today, both of which have been most informative. And I think an indication of more work needing to be done, but certainly a very good start has been made in trying to make our lives from a policy perspective and a practical perspective in managing various aspects of our health possible, and hopefully a lot easier. So I'd also like to thank the working party which helped organise today, i.e. Fiona, Barry, Mari, who were involved in bringing this all together. So thank you to all three of you. And I'd like to thank all of you for participating in today's event, because without you, it wouldn't have been, we wouldn't have needed to have it. So I think health is a topic of importance and a work in progress, like a lot of things. So I encourage people to learn more about the health policy that BCA is about to launch at BCA Connect and read about it in its particular media. And I look forward to receiving from David, which will, and Fiona, which will circulate to people, details about the products that are available and the resources that Fiona referred to earlier, both BCA-specific checklist and the more general resources that are out there in the community that are available to everyone that we may find of particular use in accessing the health system and finding out critical information that's going to be essential to us at some point in our healthcare journey. So is there any final comments before I conclude the forum? No. Has everyone gone to sleep?
No. Not asleep.
No, we're all here listening intently.
Oh, very interesting.
Okay. Well, it's right on 4 o'clock, so I think it's time that we concluded proceedings now or just a bit after. So on behalf of Sydney Branch, thank you all for your attendance. Thank you once again to our guest speakers. Thank you to Georgia. I hope you found it interesting being here from the point of view of someone who's a trainee in the health profession area. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about today as well. And I hope that it's been of value to you in your learning as well. So on behalf of Sydney Branch, may I close this, declare this Spring into Action session formally closed.